All right, and welcome to your latest episode of Tapped. This is Gretel Trung. I'll be your host for today, and I am so excited because I have my dear friend and special guest, John David Nelson, who has just recently arrived here in New York City. And today we're going to talk about the theater, both the Chicago scene, which is where he came from, the New York scene, what's on Broadway now, and maybe dip into a little bit of Queer Eye at some point today as well. I am so excited to talk to him. John, why don't you say hello?
Hello. How's it going?
John, so you just moved to New York. You've done a lot of producing for shows. What are some of the shows that you've done? I've gone and seen Madame Butterfly, which is amazing. Dreamgirls on the West End. Kinky Boots in Toronto. You talk a little bit about like how you got into that.
Very good. That's just about all of them. That's not quite all of them, but that's good. No, I'm just kidding. I actually got into it from kind of the creative side, which is a very unusual way to get into producing. I moved to Chicago so that I could be an actor, and then kind of halfway through I discovered writing, and I went from being a B student to being an A plus student, and I was kind of like, oh, this is interesting. And so then from there, I then produced kind of my own work inside of school. And then beyond school, I also started doing producing of my own stuff. And it was, and this is kind of a typical kind of thing, especially when it comes to writers, is that, like, you know, nobody's really knocking on your door to, like, get your newest play. So what do? You figure out how to put it up yourself, you know. And so it kind of started with that. And then just the way things happened, I kind of connected to some Broadway producers, and then I was like, I think I can do this. And they were like, cool, let's do it, you know. And 3 years later, I'm working on show number 9, you know. So it's like really flying, and it's crazy. It's fun.
And this last winter, you had your very first like Broadway credit. Your name was in a playbill. Mm-hmm. What did that feel like?
That was crazy, because it took me about 9 months to be able to make it all happen. It's no small feat to get there, because you have to, you know, I guess I'll just say it, like, you have to be able to raise $150,000 or just write the check for $150,000 for something like that. And everybody out there in the world, I can't do that. So I have some very good friends, you know, and they're very supportive, and they're interested in the whole thing, and so kind of pulled all of that together. And it was very intense, just because it's a big whirlwind. There's like celebrities, there's events, there's parties, and the house is full, you know. And there I was sitting in like the second row for the opening night, you know, and like Clive Owen is like spitting on me, kind of thing. And of course, like, that's the part that I'm excited about, rather than like the party where I actually met him and talked to him and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like that, whatever, you know. Like, wow, he's up on the stage.
But that's what you've worked so hard for, and like, for those who don't know, like, to put on a Broadway production, like, just that $150,000 is just a piece of a very big puzzle. And so you have a bunch of people who are packaging that type of money to even get it up on stage.
Right. I mean, if you think about it, like, M. Butterfly was is actually on the lower end of these types of things. And that was very appealing to me with that project, because I think it was like, it was like 7 or 8 million. And, you know, when you have, Finding Neverland, I think, was like, yep, 22, yep, million or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what Hamilton was. I want to say maybe like 15 or 18 or something. I mean, it's like that, just like, I'm going to jump out a window for a number like that. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my God. Very intimidating,
yeah,
you know. But then if you really think about it, you're starting a business that is hopefully, potentially going to have a show on Broadway, a U.S. national tour, potentially a show in London, potentially a soundtrack, potentially a show in Korea, in Australia, in Las Vegas, you know, in Toronto. Like, if all of those, like Kinky Boots is a perfect example because they just opened in Germany. And so, like, all of that is funneling back to this group of producers and investors, which is why there's the old saying, which is that as a producer, you can't make a living, but you can make a killing. Like, don't quit your day job,
yeah.
But you might get lucky. And if you get lucky and you invest in Phantom of the Opera and it's still on Broadway 30 years later, you've made a lot of money for pretty much doing nothing. So, you know, and it's all just kind of based on, like, you know, what you think in terms of, like, these people working on this idea, is it going to be something that will entice people to go and buy tickets? And, you know, that.
So how early in the process do you know? Do you see workshops? Do you see scripts? Do you see casting?
Let's see. Normally what I get is the boring stuff. Like, normally what I get is the creative team. You know, this is the director, this is the star, this is when it's going to happen. And then I get, like, all the budget stuff. So it's like, this is how much we're going to spend on marketing. This is how much the star is going to cost. This is how, you know, because sometimes you have the star gets like a rate per week. Sometimes they get a smaller rate per week and then they get a percentage based off of the ticket sales. It really depends on the star. It depends on the show. Every show is going to be different. So you're kind of like, I'm looking at, like, kind of the, like, numbers, which is not my favorite part, I'll admit. Excuse me. But I, you know, when I have the chance, I get to, you know, see, like, I definitely go to previews and stuff like that, but, you know, and they're kind of silly about in rehearsals and readings and things like that. But probably once I get to be a bigger producer, then it'll be a different type of thing like that. But
One day I look forward to that production, John.
Me too. What do you want to see? I'll put it up. I don't know.
just kidding. I mean, I think, like, just like, do you think that, obviously, given that with the Me Too movement and the big word of diversity, like, I've always felt, obviously, too, with Hamilton, that, like, theater is a somewhat diverse place, but at the same time, like, there's always room to grow, totally. And more stories to be told, like.
Absolutely. No, I think that, like, Hamilton is the best example of it because it's, like, the, I think that was a really watershed moment for theater, especially because of just all of the details of that show. And I feel like, in my mind, we're in a quote-unquote post-Hamilton world. You mm-hmm. know, like, I'm looking at it based on the diversity of the cast. Mm-hmm. And, like, this is, it's 2018, people, like, who are we buying tickets to see?
Yeah.
We're interested in, or at least let's put it this way. There is kind of an older crowd in the audience that may not agree with this,
yeah.
But there's definitely the younger crowd is very, very interested in these stories of color, stories of women, especially when you've got the creative teams.
Yep.
Are more and more and more it's women on these creative teams, and then you see them all winning awards
yep.
constantly. Like, Fun Home is the great example because that show is incredible. But the, you know, I definitely think the, like, Me Too movement is right up Broadway's alley. I think the kind of diversity is, like, there. We're in it now. It's today. That's now, for sure.
That's exciting.
I think so too.
And speaking of things that are up and coming, you have just came from Chicago,
mm-hmm.
Which, in case people don't know, has a very thriving theater scene. New York obviously likes to toot its stuff, but a lot of shows start in Chicago. A lot of actors come out of Chicago. Obviously, a really big improv comedy scene.
Yeah.
But I think of, like, Jesse Mueller, who came out of
exactly.
Chicago, Tony Award winner. So what's the differences like? Like, what do you feel like? What's the scene?
Well, I will say this as a producer, specifically as a producer who's just moved to New York. So forgive me, everybody in Chicago. However, commercial theater in Chicago is pretty much dead. We are basically New York. New York is where commercial theater lives. Like, we are going there to, like I was saying before, start a business to make money. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what we're trying to do, whether it happens or not. Who the hell knows? Whereas in Chicago, it's like to do something similar to that level, not to say that there's any lesser talent by any means, but you've got to have like your, you know, like a big theater in Chicago has to have this like enormous list of donors to be able to like put everything up.
Yep.
And, you know, most of the time they're only making 50% of the cost of the show just from the ticket sales, you know, so it's a lot of nonprofit type of thing, which I'm not saying is a bad thing by any means, because I've seen some really incredible theater and I have a lot of really incredible friends in New York, in Chicago, that do really incredible theater, and they deserve everything that they get from it. You know, the acclaim that Chicago has for as a theater scene is rightfully earned. That having been said, oddly enough, the average size audience house is 7. So, like, you know, you've got so many of these small companies of, like, somebody who's basically like you and me, who's like, you know, let's start a theater company, you know, and then they do all the hard work of putting it up, and then every performance they get under 10 people, and there's potentially more people on the stage than there are in the audience, you know, and so, like, it's a very interesting dynamic, which then kind of has its own little opposite viewpoint, which is that then like a commercial show, like a, well, Hamilton's a bad example. I don't know. It, like a show that started, SpongeBob is actually like kind of, people kind of loved it up in Chicago, and it was there for a bit because they did their out of town tryout there. When they do the out of town tryout, sometimes it like kind of resonates with Chicago, and so Chicagoans want to go and they see it and stuff. If it's something that was in New York and then comes to Chicago, it like kind of is only there for like 2 weeks or maybe 3 weeks, because people kind of want to see those smaller shows there versus the like several million dollar show. It's just it's a very interesting thing to think about. And like the comedy scene is completely different. That's like packed house everywhere all the time. You know, honestly, like whether it's even funny or not doesn't even matter, because everybody's just like having a fun time no matter what. And it's usually their friends up on stage. Yeah. And, you know, there's like a big festival there every year called Sketch Fest that does like three weeks of just like back to back performances, and you can buy a pass to see every single thing. And so, you know, that part of it is really fun and really cool. I mean, all of it's really fun and cool. It's just kind of everything you have to look out for and find the good stuff in Chicago, I think. But that's true here in New York too. I mean,
there's so much to see in New York City. Obviously, I'm sure that felt that way in Chicago. You can't see everything all the time. But you were just telling me, obviously, before we taped about some of the stuff you've just seen.
Yeah.
Which would be like Angels in America, part one and part two. And for those who don't know, explain how there is a part one and part two in the marathon that is going to see that all in one day.
Well, first of all, that kind of goes back to the writing of the show. And I actually did have to look this up, which is that part one came out in 1991. Oh, God. Now I just said I had to look this up, and now I don't know if I'm getting it right. Whatever. So let's just say it came out in 91. And then, actually, I think this is what it was. It came out off Broadway in 91. It went on Broadway in 92. And then in 93, Tony Kushner wrote part two. And so it's kind of intended. And so I think this might actually be the first time that it was produced as both parts, which is really incredible. I think they did the HBO
miniseries
yeah. in I think the 90s. It might have been
the late 90s, early 2000s. Yeah. Yeah,
where they did the whole thing. And so really, just kind of basically what it is just two full length plays that have, let's say, relatively the same characters between the two, and definitely the same themes, definitely the same, you know, you're following the same storylines, just kind of like this guy at the beginning of part one finds out that he has AIDS. By the end of part two, he has passed away. You know, it's like it's very heavy themes. And so to see both of them in conjunction right now, as it is on Broadway with Nathan Lane and Andrew Garfield, is very intense. It's a lot.
And you go in at what you said, 1 o'clock.
The first, yeah, I saw it on a Saturday, so I saw part one starting at 1 p.m. Then I think we were done at like 4:30. I think, which is that just by itself, and you would never even think that it was, oh my God, that was 3.5 hours long. It doesn't feel like that at all. You're completely captivated the entire time. And then the next part starts at, I think, 7. And so you have like a 2.5 hour break. You go have dinner and then you come back. And then you see part two starting at 7 and you're out at like 11 or something, or 10:30 or something like that, you know. So they're full length plays. Both of them have two intermissions, and you've got this 2.5 hour break in between them. And yet, like I was telling you earlier, the second it's over, everybody just immediately stands up and is giving it a standing ovation, because it's just that good. And I would definitely see it again. And in fact, my friend Patrick is Andrew Garfield's understudy. So I told him, like, if you find out that you're going on, you have to text me. And we were joking that it's going to be like the phone tree from elementary school or whatever, yeah, with like snow days, you know, like I'll call these people, you call these people. Anyway, so I may go, I'm hoping to go back and see it again with Patrick playing that lead role. You know, because also in terms of like the lead roles out there, and especially lead roles that are kind of gay characters, are not as prevalent as you might expect. And this is one of the major kind of gay characters. And Andrew Garfield is really, really incredible in it. So I would recommend everybody see this show.
Amazing.
I'm a big fan of it. And yes, it's a lot of time dedication, but I don't think anybody would be remiss, you know. You don't come out of it being like, oh God, thank God that's over. It's more like, oh my God, that was so good.
Which is like what theater should feel like, right? Where it really like impacts you down to your core. Obviously, I haven't seen it, but know enough about the story that right, you're like in it. It's like living life
right,
for that 7 hours.
It's also a very interesting play in today's terms, because in the early 90s, you know, HIV and AIDS was still such an epidemic that it, you know, and they talk about it in the show that was right when the kind of antibiotics were coming out, and the cocktail, as they refer to it. Whereas now we actually have there's a new drug that is like to protect people that are negative. And so we're kind of like in this whole new mindset around the disease. So to have a play that kind of reminds us where we came from, like, let's not forget, we've lived through this entire huge thing. You know, that's the kind of thing I love. It's like, you know, we need to remember the past with a lot of things. And also, speaking of which, Angels in America is very political. And the politics of the, I'll just say it, Republicans in the show is so, so reminiscent to the politics of today and like just the way that it goes and how so many people are disenfranchised about our political system. And you can see in this play kind of that similar thing happening 30 years ago. So I think it's just such an interesting show in general. But I agree. It's like, you know, you want every show to be like, no, that was the best show I've ever seen. No, that was the best show I've ever seen. That's fun.
And that's, I think that's one reason that just draws me back to theater over and over again, especially in New York City, is like, you just want to experience that moment of like, oh, that was amazing. It transported me.
I'll say that I have seen probably more shows in New York that have done that for me than not. You know, like, it's a rare show that I go to in on Broadway that I come out being like, meh, you know. It, most of the time, there, you know, there's something about it that it is very electrifying. And so I agree. I love that. It's so fun.
So, back to speaking of like gay cultural icons, somebody who was happened to be behind you in Angels of America and is my new favorite thing to binge watch, which is Queer Eye on Netflix. Uh-huh. If you haven't watched it yet, I don't know why you're even listening to this podcast. You can stop it right now. Go watch all 8 episodes and then come on back and finish the rest of this podcast because that's how serious I am about recommending it to people.
I agree with that.
The new Fab Five have become new celebrities. And I think, and to be honest, I didn't know if they could bring it back because so many things have been coming back. And I know we've talked about things that have been revamped.
Right.
And it was so surprisingly good and uplifting, and the Fab Five are incredibly talented, which are Bobby Antony, Karamo, Jonathan, and...
Are you going to get it?
Yeah! Tan France. You're amazing. I want to go shopping with you. just putting it out there. They've managed to put together a group of five who have such love for one another and for the people that they work with. And it all takes place in Atlanta, Georgia, which I thought was a really nice twist in a sense that they're in the proper South. And it's called Queer Eye because it's not only Queer Eye for the straight guy, it's Queer Eye. They do work with men who are also gay, and who knows what they'll do in the next season. But it's such an incredible line of storytelling because it's both like home makeover, personal makeover, cooking show, all in one.
Right. I love, you know, something that really kind of stuck out to me with that, and whether or not this was true of the original series kind of doesn't matter because this one definitely 100%. It's, you know, the Fab Five are so kind of secure with who they are so willing to be themselves that then it completely opens up the door for whoever it is that they're making over. So like, you know, there's a couple of them where it was like when the episode was starting, it was kind of like, oh boy, you know, like how's this old guy gonna like react? And he is, you know, like I'll just say, the first episode, the guy, with the way that he reacted once they had, like, redone everything was so charming and so adorable. And, like, the fact that he was, it just felt the freedom to kind of be himself in that way. And then he, like, opened up about the woman that he was interested in.
Which they're now engaged. Congratulations, Tom. I've been following since I've watched.
Is he on Instagram? Oh, my God.
He's on Twitter.
But, like, you know, I just love that the freedom that somebody else, by being themselves, suddenly gives you the freedom to be yourself. And then suddenly you kind of blossom a little bit more. And to tie that in with... oh, and by the way, we're also going to fix this about your living situation. We're also going to change this about your hair, whatever. I think just like kind of like really neatly packages the whole idea. And I agree with you. It is really well done. They're so fun to follow on Instagram. I follow all of them.
Yeah, if you need a fix, like I definitely recommend following all of them on Instagram. They are often together.
Right.
And they tell stories about one another. It was just Anthony's birthday.
Yeah.
And they went to Murray's Cheese Bar.
What else do you know about them?
Really too much. Candace got a new coffee table.
Tan bought new shoes.
Yes, he did. He had us choose.
Anyway,
it's a continuation. And I think that's the rare thing with social media today.
Yeah.
Is you can continue to follow these people who have, you know, entered your lives through TV,
right.
But there's an extension of them online.
Well, and also kind of going back to what we were saying earlier about kind of the like modern trends of Broadway and diversity and everything like that, the Queer Eye team is like the perfect representation of that they're all, you know, this diverse group of men who have different backgrounds, and they, you know, like I loved that one episode with the Indian guy, and then Tan is
Pakistani. Yeah.
Right. So, like, you know, he was kind of like, he knows things about kind of Indian culture already. And so, just, I don't know. I just thought it was really interesting how, and then you have the one with like the cop and like Karamo talking to him in the car. Like, that it's, I get into all of that type of thing, and I love seeing the like crossing of boundaries in that regard. And so I think that is all that I need to know, that is the modern viewpoint on entertainment, America, where we're going, you know. Everything's going to be like that soon. It's like,
let's hope. And so with that, as we wrap up this podcast, we always like to end with a Tapped prediction. And so I'm going to start. And I think for season 2 of Queer Eye,
uh-huh.
I think that they will at least have one woman featured.
Oh.
That is my Tapped prediction.
That's a good
obviously
prediction.
I don't know. But yeah, I hope that, again, as they begin to expand the diversity of the people that they work with, and I also think it'll be longer than 8 episodes, because obviously
totally.
I think that was, for Netflix, a testing ground for them. That at least a woman will be featured in one of the episodes.
That's a good prediction, actually. I like that prediction. Let's see. I don't know what I'm going to predict. Well, I'll just say I'm really, of course, we didn't really talk too much about this, but I'm very much into the RuPaul thing, just in general, and I think that's going to just continue. RuPaul got her star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, so you know. I think that we're about to see more of those types of performers kind of inserting themselves.
To be clear, drag queens.
Drag queens.
And like,
yes, exactly. I think drag queens are going to be everywhere. I think it's going to become a bigger, much bigger thing. And I already think it kind of is a bigger thing. Though, I don't know how some of the people on Queer Eye that they were making over would necessarily feel about a drag queen making them over. But maybe that might be a potential future show, even if not a episode of Queer Eye. Maybe
I could totally see
that would be kind of fun.
The Fab Five making over a queen when she's not a queen, as like a normal.
Well, I could definitely see that. I'm wondering, will they have like a drag queen be one of the people who's making over?
Oh,
some,
yeah,
like,
that could be their own show for sure.
Person, you know.
Well, I think RuPaul has opened the door, because she's been hosting stuff forever, like since the early 90s.
Yep.
And that those queen personalities will be able to expand in every place, totally. Beyond just RuPaul, for sure.
Totally. Yeah. I can see, well, Peppermint from RuPaul's Drag Race is going to be the first one on Broadway. So I think we're going to see more drag queens.
That's exciting. Well, yay! That's all for this episode of Tapped. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and Facebook. And John, where can people follow you?
I mainly am on the Instagram. I am JDN_NYC. But you can find me on Facebook if you want. I'm John David Nelson with the little ohm symbol. I'm the only one out there.
All right. Well, see you on the interwebs, and thanks for tuning in.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.